Hey everybody, welcome back for the last time ever to the Culture Binge podcast. I'm pretty sure producer Matt can correct me if I'm wrong. This is the 75th and final episode of the Culture Binge podcast. Culture Binge is a podcast that started, almost 4 years ago now, Wisecrack. Initially led by Jared and Jacob, the founders of Wisecrack, inherited by Alec and Serby. The baton was passed to me as the host maybe like 2.5 years ago. In that time, we've said bye to Alec, we've said goodbye to Serby, we've brought some new friends on, but this is the end. And in case anyone missed this in the future, I'll talk about this a little more at the end. The reason, again, for the end of the podcast is simple as this. The podcast has not been making money. Wisecrack is owned by a large company that wants us to make money for them. One of the things that we've done on this podcast that a lot of podcasts don't do is we've paid guests. We take care of the people that work on this podcast and edit it and stuff like that, which was bad business, but something we're proud of. But that's as simple as that. No one's canceling it because it's not good. No one's mad at us. We didn't get in trouble. I didn't get canceled by the podcast Illuminati. It is what it is. So let's get into it. For the last time ever, I'm Michael Burns, joined by Helen Flourish.
Hello, hello.
Hey, Helen, how are you today?
I am great, happy, and sad to be here.
Yes, and I think for the first time ever as an official, guest host, longtime producer, Maddie, wait, did you say your last name? Can I say your last name, Maddie? I didn't ask.
That's fine, I think.
Do you say Muldery or Muldery? How do you say it?
Muldery. The right
way? Muldery, what a fun name. Maddie Muldery.
Thank you.
Known to many as Producer Maddie, is joining us. And then Producer Matt, who Show Me the Meaning listeners might know, is on the ones and twos helping us on this last episode. So, Matt, thank you for that. And Maddie, thanks for being here.
I'm super excited. Also nervous.
Yeah. if you do a bad job, you won't get asked back. we call that gallows humor, friends. So there's some stuff we might talk about today, everyone. It's the final episode, and I will tell everyone that I was very emotional going into the initial recording we tried last week, and I'm going to try to like hold these thoughts till later, but I just want everyone to know, really appreciate the support and love and you all being there for us over the years, and I'm really, really, really going to miss the hell out of this. And thank you to Lev in the YouTube for saying that he loves us so much. Congratulations. That's a fantastic body of work. You can be proud of yourselves. Thank you so much. We really, 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 really appreciate it. Although now that I'm wondering, never mind. I'll say that later. And also, too, if you're in the chat, because we are streaming this, producer Matt's going to keep track of questions, comments, stuff like that. So if we don't get to it now, we'll get to it later. Okay, so a lot to talk about. I'll tell you one thing, guys. You know why I'm so excited that we couldn't do this last week?
Why?
Why?
Because we don't have to talk about the Oscars or the slat now. It would seem really lame. It's been talked to death. I think there's no need to do it. And when that happened, we got a lot of messages that were like, oh, you got to use this to talk about slaps and chaps. So very, very glad that ended up not happening. So if you did have anything prepared to say about that, please don't do it. We might talk about award shows in general a little later, but we will not talk about that event. I want to talk about a couple of things today that relate to, I would say, like standby Culture Binge topics, which are education and digital media. So we'll get into some stuff for that. But first, the segment that I've tried to kill and you wouldn't let me kill. We have slaps and chaps. We'll go a little more freestyle here. We'll open it up. We'll do some specific slaps and chaps. And if anyone has broader slaps and chaps, because this is the last time to do this, you can give those as well. If you're in the chat on the stream right now, feel free to throw your own slaps and chaps down as well. And if we don't say them now, I can run through some of them at the end. How about this? Let's go a little round robin, rather than doing them all at once, okay? So we're going to go in an order that goes Michael, Maddie, Helen, okay? Are we all clear on the order? Great.
We're clear.
It's alphabetical in a reverse way. So I'm going to start with my first slap. My first slap is the Jerrod Carmichael special that came out this weekend on HBO. I know it's something producer Matt was excited about as well. The title of the special is Rothaniel, which has significance when you watch it. Jerrod Carmichael, just such a good comedian. I think people have liked him for a while. Bo Burnham directed the special, and I think that's apparent. And, you know, this has been in the press enough to where this isn't any type of spoiler, but Jerrod Carmichael does come out as gay in the special, and it kind of revolves around that. So it's a very personal special. But I think in a world where a lot of comedy specials have become a little bit too much like motivational speakery, like explorations of trauma without laughs, Carmichael does such a good job of having a really personal and impactful special that's like still really funny and you still laugh a lot. And then he went on SNL this week, and I would encourage everyone to check out his monologue if you haven't already. But that's a slap for me. Maddie, what's a slap for you?
Slap for me is I did stand up for the first time two weeks ago.
Speaking of stand up.
Yeah. So that has been a big slap in my life. And I did it a few times after. So I'm like getting more, I'm really just getting my nerves out because I'm like so afraid to be up on stage alone. Like I've done improv and sketch and it doesn't freak me out the same way. But yeah, that was big for me. It's going how beginning stand-up goes where you're like, I'm probably gonna look back on this and be like so embarrassed about my jokes. But all in all.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So friends, if you're in the Los Angeles area, be on the lookout for Maddie at your local comedy open mic.
At the smallest, worst open mics you can find.
Yes. So if you want to find her, that's a weird thing to say. If you want to find her, find the worst open mics. But that's amazing. And I'm just sad we won't get to track your journey to comedic fame on this podcast.
I know.
Helen, how about you? What's your first slap?
I mean, now I have a slap that Maddie is doing stand-up. That's awesome. I told her a few weeks ago you stole hers.
I'm going to change,
but listen, it's going to be a real slap. But also, Maddie is really funny on TikTok. I'm just saying, just putting that out there. Sorry, Maddie.
Helen,
I've told you this before.
When you told me that, I was like, oh my God, I forgot that people actually like watch the stuff that I post. And then it was like a moment of reality where I'm like, But thank you.
Oh, yeah. There's people out there looking at it. Well, it's a good thing they are because it's extremely funny. So this is great.
Thank you.
But my real slap is that I saw Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Oh, that was one of mine.
And yeah, it was super. Wait, so you guys both have seen it or you have not seen it?
I want to see it so badly.
Okay, well, it's great. Go see it. I think if you can, probably see it twice. I'm going to go see it again because it is so much movie that I feel like there's just, you have to see it twice because it's just, it's a lot to take in. The production design is incredible. It's a truly original film, which I think many of us lament that there are not enough of these days. Highly, highly, highly recommend. So that's my slap.
Well, now it rolls back around to me. Mine, actually, this is original and unique, is Everything Everywhere All at Once, the new film by Daniels. Loved it.
Oh, so good.
Everyone should see it. It's a movie that I wish we could do a wisecrack video about immediately, but we have to wait and see if it gets popular because as of right now, it's not popular enough. Everyone should watch it. I will just second that. But then since I just copied yours, I'll go to my next one as well, which is another entertainment-based thing. Atlanta season 3, if you're not watching it, it's really good. I think Atlanta is the best show, and they do things on TV that no one else does, or maybe better put, that no one else can get away with. And it's very interesting. It's not a show you watch for the plot or for the development of story. And it's a show that was off air for 4 years. And in the first episode back, none of the main people are in it. And, you know, this is a show that when it started, the only person who was really famous in it was Donald Glover. But since then, like Zazie Betts, Lakeith Stanfield, and Brian Tyree Henry are like legit movie stars. They're fucking super famous, and none of them are in the first episode because it's the boldest show on television. So check that out if you haven't. Maddie, you get another slap.
I guess I'll follow with like TV stuff. I am really happy recently that I feel like rom-coms are kind of coming back in a good way. And I'm like, I feel like there have been like teen Netflix stuff that doesn't count. But like, I want that like early 2000s rom-com back. And Bridgerton honestly gives me those vibes. I'm such a sucker for it. Season two.
Bridgerton.
Yeah, I'm a Bridgerton girl.
Wow, we know so, you know,
I can tell by your faces
comedian.
That neither of you guys are into it.
I've just never watched it.
I haven't seen Bridgerton, but I want to because of the costuming and because I hear that it is, I hear that it's really good.
It's really fun.
And steamy.
Yeah, season one is really steamy. Season two, not really steamy.
Listen, this is culture binge. We don't talk about steamy things. A lot of kids listen to this podcast, okay?
Oh, sorry, kids.
Yeah, Helen, how about you? What's your next slap?
Okay, so my next slap is actually a personal one, and it is that I think I have found a way to doom scroll effectively, all right? Ooh. So I'm taking some productivity hack that's like some guru somewhere probably like wrote a Medium post about whenever, which is time boxing, and I'm giving myself like 5-minute intervals to just doom scroll the shit out of stuff, right? Whether it's like COVID news or, you know, I'm not even going to get into it. All of the other horrible things that are going on in the world, I have like a certain set of Google search terms that I go to immediately, read all the news about them, and when the 5 minutes is up, I have to stop.
I love it.
And it's really working. It's legitimately working. Like, my mental health is improving because I don't think I knew how much time I was spending just reading bad news, right? And maybe just want to, you know, if it's possible, back away from that slowly. And that's what I'm doing. And yeah, guys, give it a try.
That's great.
You're chronic doom scrollers.
That makes me think, yeah, find this if you haven't, people who are listening. There was a great, Chris Pine went on some sort of podcast recently, but a video got posted on Twitter. And I guess like went a little viral where Chris Pine talks about it. He had a flip phone for 4 years and he just used to like read books and do all this stuff. And then he got an iPhone and his life fell apart and he doesn't read anymore and he's becoming stupid. And he said, like, I couldn't tell you anything about literature, but I could tell you all about Pete Davidson and Kim Kardashian's relationship. So, yeah, be like Helen and, you know, get off the thing. Okay. Going back around. We're going to wrap up the slap soon. I have another slap. My slap is that getting to know the people who listen to this podcast and have been fans of it for the last 3 or 4 years has been really significant. I've loved a lot of the emails that we've gotten, the voicemails that we've gotten. I like that we've had so many people who have called in and written in multiple times, like, you know, shouts to Megan Roach and a bunch of other people we hear from a lot. It's been amazing. And I there's people who have written in and called, and when we've done the live chat, jumped in, you know, again thinking about someone like Dude Abides, people who I like almost think of as just like friends, like people I know, people who I feel connected to. And that's a big slap for me for the years I've been on this podcast, and really appreciate everyone that made that possible. Back to you, Maddie. What's your next slap?
I don't know how to follow that. That was really sweet.
I know, as I was saying it, I was just like, oh, this is bad.
I will
give one to us.
I will second it. Like when we put out the news that the podcast was ending, just everyone on Twitter like really caring about it was nice to see, because we definitely put a lot of work into it. This, at least Michael for longer, but me for this past year. So
yeah,
I appreciate it.
Definitely. And before I pass to Helen, oh, sorry, did you have more?
Helen can go. I need to get my thoughts together for a third slap.
We'll get around. Yeah. Before Helen goes as well, appreciate everyone who's donating in the chat. I will say that, like, I don't really know where that money goes, but if you do, I just don't. Like, I don't see it. I'll just be honest. I've never seen that money. I guess it goes to, like, the channel in general, which I'm sure is good. If anyone does want to toss any money or do anything, I'll let everyone know. We're redoing our Patreon. We just launched it. There's some new levels there. If you have money to throw around and want to support us, that's probably the best thing you could do right now if you're not already a patron. And the reason I'm comfortable encouraging you to do that is we have some new stuff we're doing. One of the things is a kind of short podcasty thing where one of our colleagues, Amelia Bazell, is going to interview Wisecrack writers and researchers and editors about recent videos. So I'm recording one of those with her this week. Another thing we have at like the $10 level, I'm going to start doing these regular videos that we're calling Philosophy Office Hours. That's basically just me doing like a one-person video podcast where I'm going to talk about some of the like philosophy and theory behind our videos and then do a Q&A. You know, speaking of our friend Dude Abides, he wrote in a really cool question for the first one I got to. If you don't have the money, don't do it. But if you have money to throw around and you want some of this content, we're going to try to do some of it on Patreon. So, you know, that's the thing I'll say. We'll get through a couple more real quick because we got to keep it moving. Helen, you get another slap.
A third slap.
Only if you want it. You can pass. You can pass because we got a lot to get to. So don't force it if you don't got something.
We do have a lot to get to. Well, I'm not going to force it, but I do have a culture binge slap really quick.
Yeah.
And that is Serby. I feel like, I love all the hosts. I love Serby slaps. And I was like super, like I've been, you know, I knew you guys, like you, Alec Burns before Culture Binge, but I met Serby through Culture Binge. And I just think she's awesome. So that's my like friend crush on Serby. Like I'm just putting it out there. Yeah.
Very reasonable. Yeah. Very reasonable.
Yeah. That's it. That's it.
That's great. I'll do, let's wrap these up. I'm going to do one more. And then if you got one more, Maddie, you're allowed it, but you don't need to take it. My last one is going to build off Helen's. A slap for me has been, getting to meet so many great people via this podcast and, you know, have people like, I even though I already knew him, I got to know Alec a lot better on this podcast. I never met Serby until the first time I did this podcast with her. It's a, you know, the mechanism by which I got to know people like Raymond better. I got to know, you know, Helen, who I'd met before, but got to know Helen better in this context. Matt and Maddie, who I did not know until we started working on podcasts with them. And it's very rare to get to work on something with people where you like all of the people. You feel both encouraged and challenged by those people. They're people you're proud to work with and proud to make stuff with. So that's been a big slap for me. Maddie, you're allowed one more slap if you want it, but we don't need to do it because I feel like I want to get a little bit negative.
I'll do one quick one. It's sort of like, I guess, a piggyback on yours again. But I will say I was in the service industry for 5 years before I got this job and doing like film sets on and off, but mostly service industry. And it was really intimidating to like apply for jobs and start a new job after not working in like an office or any environment like that. And coming in to work with all you guys was just so easy and like, it was a great jumping off point. So I'm just really grateful for everyone here as well.
Cool. I'm just officially on the precipice of crying. I will try not to. So to avoid crying, let's do some chaps real quick. We'll try to keep these a little bit shorter. My chap in general is, I think I've really been chapped by the discourses around both celebrity and I think like comedy in general on the internet recently. And I think that we're in this moment, and I've definitely been guilty of this, where we're all so quick to be right or to prove others wrong. The discourse is getting like really obnoxious. And I think a lot of the post Oscars discourse was just terrible. And to be clear, it was terrible on all sides. It was fun for like 10 hours when it was kind of weird and jokey. But I don't know. I just think we need to care more about different things. And even like the way in which so much of our discourse revolves around celebrities, part of me is like, I guess that's fine. Celebrities have always been there for us to project onto and to sort of talk about in a fun way. But also it's like all the celebrities we're obsessed with, I mean, Maddie's probably experienced this being in the service industry in LA. I mean, these are people that like many of them wouldn't save you if you were drowning in front of them. And all they had to do was like pull you a little bit to save your life. And these are people that we put so much of our attention and money into. And it's just like, I don't know. I think we can do better than worrying about it. And I think there's people in our own lives we can care about or people that aren't as like famous. I don't know. I felt very bummed by the discourse last week. So that's a chap for me in general. Now we'll go the opposite way. Helen, what's a chap?
Man, I came into this without a chap.
Oh, that's fine, you know, if you don't have
one. Once I'm just going to be, yeah, I think I just want to sit and listen to your chaps and be that ear for you, in addition to whoever else is listening to this podcast.
Wow. Yeah, Helen being like, I'm not negative like you guys. I choose to live a positive life.
I'm not negative.
Maddie,
this
are you going to...
This is part of my, like, thing.
Yeah, Maddie, how about you? Are you going to take advantage of the opportunity to be negative, or are you also going to take the high road and make me look like a monster?
No, I'm going to be negative. My chop is that every time I leave LA, I always think I like LA, and then I leave LA for like a weekend and I'm like, oh my God, LA sucks. And
it's terrible here.
Don't want to come back at all. And I'm in Santa Cruz right now and I'm just like, there's nature and it's nice weather.
It's so much better up there. So much better.
I'm just having a hard time. But then I come back to LA and after a few weeks, I'm like, I love it here. We'll never leave. And then I leave again. So I don't know what to do about that.
Yeah, that's very real. It's very real. I'll do another quick slap. A chap. One chap I have is with the, I guess in general, like the digital media industry and its reckless appetite to acquire and consume with no real concern for quality and content, and the way in which, and we'll talk about this in some of the topics, how we just live in an economy, and whether it's digital media or live concerts or real estate, where the real things in life are just way stations on the way to profit and accumulations. So we don't, like, we live in an economy that doesn't value things, experiences, and humans. And it's becoming so apparent. Was even thinking about this with, like, I think it's now we're up to like 30% of single family homes in America are owned by private investment firms, because a thing that should just be a thing of value, like a place for people to live, is just a speculative investment. And in some cases, it's worth more or more valuable to investment firms to have empty commercial and residential real estate. And I just, all of this, it sucks. I don't like it. Maddie, do you have one more negative thing, or are you chapped out?
I think I'm chapped out.
Okay, I'll say one more. Another chap I have is the constant feeling that we're all constantly living on a Titanic built out of cards heading towards a real iceberg with no lifeboats, and that so many factors in our economy and culture and world feel so hopeless sometimes, and it's not good, and I don't like it very much. And I'm thinking about this too, because a topic we were going to talk about last episode that we're not now was this New York Magazine piece on Adam Tooze, this sort of historian and economist who's very interesting. And because of reading that article about him and prepping, I started listening to one of his books that's an audiobook on the 2008 financial crisis and everything that led up to that. It's both very interesting and just infuriating, and reminds you that a lot of the people with the most power in this world, like, truly could care less if we live or die. And look at all of us as vessels for accumulation of profit. That was grim. I apologize. But also, I don't.
I saw a tweet yesterday that was, someone was like, it's crazy that not one single billionaire has ever been good enough to just be like, hey, I'm going to use my money to, like, save a bunch of people and, like, you know, do all the good that I can with my money. Like, not one single one of them. Like, just says a lot. I don't know.
The first time I ever had any job where I had, like, a salary, it was not, I mean, it was world historically a lot. It wasn't a crazy amount. But my first academic full-time job, I made $45,000 a year. And I was in Baltimore. I paid cheap rent. And I was so excited about that that when I got my first paycheck, I insisted on buying a round for everyone at my local bar, as if I was just like Mr. Moneybags. But I was just like so happy and wanted to share that. So what I'm saying is, make me a billionaire and I'll give everyone free drinks. We're going to talk about a couple topics really quickly, everyone. You can probably imagine it feels a little weird for me, at least, to kind of just do like a happy, normal podcast, because I'm very sad that we're ending this podcast. So we have some feel good topics. They're not feel good, guys. They're just not feel good topics, but we'll talk about a couple things really quick. So there was an article in The Guardian, came out 2 days ago. Maybe it'll have come out 4 days ago by the time this airs, if you're not watching the stream. And it was a study, a report they did. It took place in Long Beach, California. And the gist of it is that 20% of California community college students report experiencing homelessness. And that in some cases, and this is at Long Beach City College in California, south of Los Angeles, students have been given permission to sleep in their cars in a campus parking facility, because that's the safest option that they have. And they have bathrooms and Wi-Fi and things like that. And it was a really harrowing story to read, because, you know, we talk about education a lot on this podcast. A lot of what we do and riff off here is inspired by, you know, being curious folks who like learning. I know a lot of our audience work in education, and we love you all for that, and we think you're good. And this kind of ties into some of the other stuff we talked about, because, like, you know, education's expensive, housing is expensive, but you need education to get a job so you can make money, so you can get the house or whatever it is. And it just creates these cycles. And it just makes me, it's very upsetting to know that there's people who are trying to like better their lives by pursuing education who end up unhoused because of that. And that it's even like a thing that exists where students at these colleges, in some cases, have to sleep in their cars on campus. And you know, I think too about probably the lack of awareness of some of this stuff for educators. I know there's times I did teach for a while at a college that was largely low-income, first-generation college students. And I just think about how often, like, too, like, I had no idea what people's situations were. And it's hard to be, I think we all probably, not we all, at least I probably make naive assumptions about, like, what the students' lives were like outside of there. But I can't imagine, you know, what it's like to be a student and work and all these sorts of things if you don't have a place to stay in. And I think for me, like, reading the article was really just the coalescing of a lot of the issues we talk about, things that involve the economy and housing and education. And maybe there's nothing else to talk about here other than to say it was a harrowing thing to read and is a bummer. But I'm curious if you all had a chance to look at the article or have any thoughts on this.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that I feel like I feel like people who don't know that it's happening don't, you know, like you said, educators might not have any idea because those who are experiencing it, they don't want you to know that they're dealing with this, right? Yeah. Like they want to keep things going as normal as possible, right? To have that facade. And it's like nearly 20% of California community college students being homeless is just like a mind-blowing
And that's
statistic.
To be clear, that's 1 in 5, right? I'm not a math whiz, but
yeah,
yeah, that's crazy.
It's insane. And there, like you said, it's just such a multifaceted issue that really serves as like a microcosm for so many of the issues systemically that we have in this country. And I feel like, I don't know, I just remember a few years ago when I was working at, writing at the San Fernando Valley Business Journal, I was covering philanthropy. And I remember getting a press release or something on how one of the local community colleges had set up a food bank. And I was like, oh, cool, like a food bank for the community, right? And it was like, no, it's a food bank for the students who go there. And it's like, I had not encountered that before. And I was like, whoa, wow, this is like, you know, this is my first time thinking like, wow, it's really a problem in Southern California that we have, you know, that like homelessness is such an issue that it's affecting like, you know, community college students. But then it turns out, you know, this is the whole state. Like this is just such a, and it's not just this one that has the food bank, right? It's like become a necessity for all of these colleges to have these resources, which is awesome that they have them. But the fact that we have to have them in the first place, just, yeah, it's like you said, there's not a whole lot more to say about it, but it sucks. It's like just a huge issue, I think.
Yeah. And the fact that, it's become like a big enough problem that the college even acknowledged it and was like, we're like, you guys can sleep in the parking lot in your cars. They are acknowledging that they know about it, but they're not doing more to change it. I don't know what they could do, but
yeah, it's just hard too. Cause like, you know, the irony with a lot of this, because all these, it's never just like the one problem, right?
Yeah.
You know,
college doesn't have funding either. And
Exactly.
Yeah. What I would be curious as well is I'm sure a bunch of the faculty are housing insecure as well. Because, you know, and this is like a general stat. I don't have the specific number for the city college system in Los Angeles or community colleges in California. But in general, about 70% of courses at higher universities and colleges in America are taught by contingent and non-tenure track faculty, which largely means people that are paid per course. And there's been tons of articles in recent years about, you know, adjunct professors and grad students that also live in their cars. There was a visiting professor or like a sort of like lecturer in the UK who was living in a tent in a park because she couldn't afford rent in London. So, you know, you think about this situation and it's very likely that we have, you know, university classes in a major metropolitan area in the quote unquote most prosperous nation in human history. And in these classes, we probably have unhoused and food insecure students being taught by potentially housing insecure and food insecure, you know, faculty. And it just makes you wonder, like, I think a lot of topics we've talked about on this podcast over the years boil down to a question of where do we locate value in society? What do we deem valuable? But then the tension and the contradiction between what we might deem valuable as individuals and even what we're told is valuable compared to what our society deems as valuable, you know? And when we talk about the importance of education, and we talk about the importance of like food and housing security. It's not like there's many people in this country and like politicians and leaders wouldn't be like, yeah, education's important. You got to get educated. And this ties into even other problems, right? What do we have to do to get education? A lot of cases, take out student loans. But it just, it's that tension in so many areas of life where, you know, society deems things as valuable, but then it's just like, to be cliche, actions speak louder. And we end up with situations like this, which is a bummer. And it shows us a little bit more about what society's actual values are.
I would be curious to know if anybody who's who is an educator who's like listening to this podcast has any thoughts on like solutions, right? Other than like, obviously, I mean, obviously public college should be subsidized. I don't know. In my opinion, like, and no, community college, I think as well, obviously falls under that. And I feel like that, but that only goes so far. Like the, like you said, Michael, the fact that you have to go to college in the first place to get the job, to get to buy the house, like there's a lot more factors at play than it just like college affordability too, right?
Yeah.
And I think like, yeah, I'm just wondered what do we do about this?
And yeah. I mean, and even like at a really simple level, this isn't like a good solution, but like in the UK and like some places in Europe, you can at least get like no interest student loans that you don't have to pay back until you start making money. So even stuff like that, I think in certain situations, which isn't a great solution because you're still going into debt, but at least if it's like no interest and you're not paying until you make a salary. But, you know, but once again, I just think maybe the gist here is that I think that a value of this podcast and something we've talked about a lot and something we know matters to a lot of people listening to this audio, this podcast, is that education is real important. And to be clear, education is important, whether that means you're going to the library and checking out books you're interested in, listening to podcasts and watching videos, or if you're taking a few classes, or if you're pursuing graduate education, no matter what type of education, we're being kind of universal and you know, small C Catholic in our description here. But it's always scary for us to see that a thing we think is really important and powerful might not be doing so well, and that society might not be valuing that thing so much. So, yeah, but I mean, you check that article out. It's was published in The Guardian two days ago. Yeah, it'll be easy to find. A couple other things I want to hit really quickly, and I'm going to go in reverse order for my friends who might be looking at a rundown sheet with me. I found this kind of a fun and ironic story. So Gawker ran a piece last week, and it was about salaries at Business Insider. So there was a thing that happened a few months ago where, and I forget the exact title, either the CEO, COO, executive editor, something like that of Business Insider had tweeted something asking about people's salary ranges. And it had this like journalistic, like the gist of this guy's vibe was like, wow, it's really harmful when people don't share their salaries. We should do that more. Da, da, da. And a bunch of people that worked at Business Insider and others immediately responded to the tweet and said, how much do you make? And then he wrote a thing about how actually it'd be inappropriate for him to share that. And it's such an interesting discussion because I think often we've grown used to the idea that it's like uncouth or impolite to talk about money and salaries. Of course, the question is like, who does it benefit? Like, who benefits from us not talking about how much we make? Not us. But I think this is kind of funny then. After all of that, Business Insider had a document with all of the salaries at the company that they kept on a Google Drive that any employee could access. An employee downloaded it and made it public. And Business Insider has since hired a forensic team to investigate who leaked it. And they put out a statement that was just very funny about how anti the company it was to do that. And I just think it's so funny that, and it's funny that it happened. And it's funny that they act as if this is such a huge like ethical or moral lapse from the employee. If for any reason that employee listens to this podcast, good bit.
Yeah. That was, I remember that tweet. That was something, that was wild, man. Like, how can you, just the audacity to think that you can ask something like that and not be transparent with your own.
Yeah.
What did he think
was going to happen?
Yeah, it's like bosses think they're outside of it. Have either of y'all ever been in work scenarios where you've known how much people have made and there's been transparency around that?
Well, at my last company, I tried to be more aggressively transparent with what I made to other people who wanted to know. Like,
yeah, because I want to ask, how did you do that? Because I think sometimes it's one of those things where that's a value that I would say I hold, right? But I also don't know how to go about that. I'm not going to like send a message to all my colleagues to be like, let's say how much we all make on three. Here's what I make. But then if someone asked me, I wouldn't lie. But how did you go about that?
It was more that, you know, when someone asked me, so I say aggressively transparent, aggressive is the wrong word. That would suggest that I was like going to people and saying, hey, listen to how much I make.
That was my visual. You just in their faces.
Wasn't doing that. I guess I mean relatively speaking to everywhere else that I've worked. No, it was especially when, so two things. When someone would ask, right? I would, you know, tell them. And I would tell them, like the whole breakdown. And then, because I was assuming that they wanted to know in order to compare it to their salary and then be able to negotiate more or make sure that they were being paid what they were worth, right? And also, when we had candidates who came on and, you know, if they had any questions about how much they could ask for, which did happen sometimes, because that was sort of the relationship that I tried to have with these folks. We would talk about like how much I made and how much, you know, what they had made at their last company, that kind of thing. And I would like give them suggestions if needed, right? To as far as like what they could ask for and that kind of thing. So it was kind of like, it was sort of like, it was you always want to vouch for people to make more money, obviously, which is something that you do, Burns, very well, I think, for all of us. And I felt like being honest about how much I made and making it so that people who, you know, wanted to make more money or felt like people who wanted to be paid what they were worth, like helping them do that in an effective way, if that meant me sharing how much I made, that made sense, you know, just whatever to get people to help them move up, I guess.
I'm remembering now at the restaurant I worked at, it's not the same thing, but the managers at one point found out that they were not making more than anyone else, despite like they had to go through like really long training and, you know, stay longer hours and do stuff when they weren't at the restaurant. And they got all upset and like talked to the owners, and the owners basically like gaslit them and were like, like, you didn't ask for more money. And they were like, okay, like, I guess we're at an impasse. Can we have more money now? And then they like worked it out, but it was a whole thing. I just thought that was like a crazy reaction for them to be like, it's your fault, which maybe that's true, but I don't.
Yeah, it's a really weird one. And I think like Helen's, I mean, both those experiences and like Helen, your experience in particular, brings up how tricky of a situation talking about stuff like that is, because we don't have a culture of doing it. Like you said, Helen, it's one thing if someone asks you or if you can empower them. But, you know, there's even that worry sometimes where, I mean, this sounds weird. I've been in situations where I've been afraid to talk about it because either A, I'm like, oh my God, if I find out everyone makes more than me, I'm going to lose my mind. Or B, if I find out I make more than other people, I'm going to feel bad or they might be mad at me or something like that. But yeah, my attitude in general has always been people should make as much as they can. And I've never really been in my professional life in a position to decide people's salaries. I have been in a position to encourage people to ask for more. And I've been in situations before where I've known more than the other person has, if that makes sense. So I've been in some situations where I've said to someone applying for a job or working in something adjacent, kind of with like a little bit of a wink, like, oh, I saw that you're going to ask for blank. I think you could probably ask for more than blank, or whatever it might be, which, you know, is something, if not the best thing. But and then there's so many like gender and racial disparities that tie into all this as well. And there's been times where, you know, often people who have my demographics have historically got paid more. And there's a lot of stuff going on there. So it's just such a weird thing. And part of me thinks the only thing you can do is invite everyone you work with over. You make a thing of punch. You tell them it's just normal punch. You have already spiked it with psilocybin or LSD, maybe a little pure MDMA. You wait about an hour. People are feeling good. You say on the count of three, everyone else say how much they make, and it's out there, but you're all in an empathetic and open zone, and you discuss what that means. You record the whole thing so you have a record of what you decided. You never show anyone else that tape. and you go from there. So I would say that's what people should do.
I mean, definitely some of that. We should definitely
upwards of 20% of that.
I don't know about like the drugging people part. I mean, there's some case where I'm open to, you know, to this. No,
never drug anyone. No, even if you think it's funny, right. Even if it's your friend, just never drug anyone.
No, but yeah, please don't drug people. No, but I do think like we should, I think normalizing the conversations around salary will help everybody move up, because I think for a long time, the people who have held the power have been of the mindset that nobody's going to talk about it because it's an embarrassing thing and they don't want to know. But I think that's one way of, you know, I mean, just camaraderie with your colleagues in general, if that's possible. I know it sounds utopian, but if there's a way of being able to, you know, have these discussions, and yeah, knowledge is power.
Well,
you know?
I think remembering that our colleagues are not our enemies. They are not the ones we're fighting against. They should be the ones we're fighting with. And, you know, it's kind of that adage of a rising tide lifts all boats. You have more power together. And, you know, I was thinking about this as well, because, you know, news, this is podcast related. So one of the big unions or big groups that makes podcasts over at Spotify, Parcast, they put the Parcast union on their Twitter account. So this is out there. They've like voted on strike authorization. And if Spotify isn't down to negotiate, they might go on strike. And the cool thing about that is it's people at that company together saying, okay, like if you're not going to take care of all of us, then we're all going to walk away. And when you have that collective power, things are great. But when we're all like isolated on our own, it's a little bit harder there. One of the other things we were talking about as well, that we might have talked about more last week when we were going to do the first version of this, is layoffs at BuzzFeed. And BuzzFeed in particular is making a lot of cuts to their journalism team. And they had a meeting a couple weeks ago where Jonah Peretti, the guy who started it, also brother of Chelsea Peretti, delightful comedian. Fun fact. I hope she hates him, because I like her a lot and he sucks so bad. So I just hope she fucking hates him. But Jonah Peretti literally like bailed on a company Zoom meeting before anyone could ask him any questions. And when you look at the language around it, it's just sort of like, well, BuzzFeed makes money, but journalism doesn't make us money, so why should we do it? Which is such a scary precedent. Like, people that are doing investigative journalism and trying to find, like, the truth of situations in our world, well, it's not profitable, so we're just going to shit can it.
Ugh. Yeah.
Things are great. Go ahead, Helen.
No. Go ahead,
I was going to say, one thing about the salary thing before we move on is, I'll say this in case there's one person listening who doesn't know this, because I didn't know it. I kind of came up, you know, in academia, doing a lot of freelance work. And when I got my first like salary job in the private field, I got offered a salary and I was like, oh, cool. So I got a job and they're going to give me money to do the job. Great. And I had to have a friend say to me like, hey, bud, what you're supposed to do now is counteroffer. And I was like, that's crazy. I'm also very like Midwestern in my social ethics. I'm like, that would be very rude if, you know, why would I do that?
Same. Yeah.
But I just like I didn't know that. No one ever taught me that. I didn't have parents that taught me that. I didn't experience that in my time in academia, where that's not really a thing that happens. And you realize there's a lot of people who don't know that, not just me. And people are missing out simply because they don't know that in a lot of industries and fields, it goes like this, basically, friends. People get approved to advertise a job. Company might say the maximum we have is $100,000. They advertise the job. Someone applies. They offer them the job. They say, we can give you 80, because they leave themselves wiggle room to negotiate. So if you're that person and you got offered 80, you might think it's crazy to say, what about 90? But you say, what about 90? They get to be like, we look like the good guy because we're giving you 10. But we're saving 10 in the long term because we were approved for 100. I know those are big numbers, so it's, you know, do whatever you want with that. But in case anyone didn't know how that's worked, I didn't know how that worked until I was well into adulthood.
Is that?
And it's a real thing.
Is that like a new thing in like more recent generations? Or was that, it's always been a thing?
Well, it's always been a thing for white men. I know it sounds silly, but like it's been, and like I've read a few articles about this, how historically white men and like, right after that, white women tend to be the one, especially college educated white men and women come in hot like that. But a lot of first generation college students, people that, you know, like immigrants and people that are first generation, obviously like people of color don't do that as much because there's not like the culture for it. Cause a lot of, you know, white college educated people grow up in families that work in industries where like that value is instilled. So, you know, ask for money, I guess, is my main takeaway for everything in life. No matter what you're doing, ask for money. I know there's one too where I'd love to hear what people think about this in their own jobs and work, but unless you're going to email us in the next 15 minutes, it doesn't really help us. So speaking of that, let's hit the mailbag for the last time ever. Woo. I'm going to start with an email that got sent literally during the recording of this podcast. This is from Brian. So Brian's email says, "Hi, Culture Binge Crew. I don't know if you'll still get this email. We did, but I just wanted to thank you for all the episodes your team has put out over the years. Your conversations gave me a new perspective on a wide range of topics, and I really enjoyed your jokes and wit throughout the episodes. I seriously lost my shit when Michael read my email in the Olympics. It really means a lot. I look forward to your new ventures and hope what you guys started here can continue in some shape or another. Thanks for everything, Brian." Thank you very much, Brian. I don't really have anything to comment on that other than like, thank you, Brian. And I'm still actively trying not to cry. If anyone else has thoughts on that, I just thought it was a nice email.
Yeah, it is a nice email. Thanks, Brian.
So here's an email from Olaf. Olaf said this, "Hi, Culture Binge. I'm devastated to hear the podcast is closing down. You could say it really chaps my ass. This has been my number one favorite podcast since its beginning. I had a bit of a routine every other Friday where I would listen to Culture Binge while running some errands, and you guys always gave me the feeling of companionship. Yeah, I'm kind of lonely, but what can you do? It's an epidemic. I love the feeling of structured yet relaxed conversations between intelligent and socially aware people that I could listen in on. I was always too lazy to write you an email, although many times I wanted to, so I'm jumping on this last opportunity to tell you that I'm going to miss this slightly parasocial thing we had very much, especially that since 21st of May 2019, when the first episode aired, the world is seemingly an ever-accelerating process of going to shit, and having this podcast to look forward to was quite a comforting thing, more than I realized. I hope no one's done this yet because it's my only remotely relatable area of expertise. So here's the cast of Culture Binge as the Beatles albums." For those of you who know, I've often said to write in or review the podcast and use some categorization of telling us who we are. So let me get into this real quick. Michael, that's me, A Hard Day's Night, on account of being very energetic and sweaty in the best way possible. Very sweaty. actually, I have another chap real quick. Chap. Tom's Organic Deodorant. On Friday of last week, I had run out of deodorant. I was going out to a bar. I didn't want to smell bad. I literally bought a stick of deodorant at a store. All they had was Tom's. Put it on. I didn't buy any others one. I smell terrible. I smell terrible. I paid $7 for organic deodorant. I smell terrible.
You cannot pay me to wear natural deodorant. I'm sorry. No. I don't care about the aluminum. No, it doesn't work.
Put aluminum in my bloodstream, please. Okay, back to Olaf's email. So energetic and sweaty, Hard Day's Night. Special thanks to you, Michael, for being the constant throughout the majority of the episode. Seemingly always excited to host the podcast in the most entertaining way possible. Thank you. Jared, the OG, is Revolver for starting something great, then taking brave steps into the unknown to try new things. Yes, shouts to Jared for starting this podcast in the first place and being the one that let Wisecrack do podcasting. Serby, the White Album. That's kind of funny. For being greatly inspiring and listen, it's funny because Serby is the only person of color who's been a regular host on this. So I'm just going to say it just in case anyone thought like, I know you got it, but maybe someone thought I was, listen, I'm getting canceled on the last episode. It happened. I'm done. Serby is the White Album for being greatly inspiring and personifying all killer, no filler. Olaf says, as a cis male, I wish I was half the strong woman she is. You and I both, bud. Alec, who? Abbey Road, for the calming quality of his voice and quality of his takes. One would be remiss not to mention the quality of his gentle giant's beard, which also matches John Lennon's beard on the cover of his album. I liked Gentle Giant. First time I met Alec, I was like, how are you this tall? Speaking of people who are taller than I thought they should be, Raymond is Let It Be.
Same.
For appearing relatively late, but becoming an instant classic, I agree that he sounds like a good dog dad. Helen, I know her, Rubber Soul. I'd never seen her before, but Culture Binge let me get to know her better, which was a great experience. Similar to my experience with this album, producer Maddie and other producers.
Me.
Help for being the backbone of the discography. Also says, Rachel, Riley, Robin, anyone else who appeared, even if for one episode, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, for greatly expanding the lore of Culture Binge cinematic universe with your presence and takes, similarly how this album expanded the band's influence. Thank you all. You were great. Wish you all the best. I hope the streaming show on the YouTube channel can fill the gaping void that's unfortunate news that's created in my life. I'm being a bit dramatic, but really I'm going to miss it a lot. You're not being dramatic, man. P.S. Glory to Ukraine. Thank you for that, Olaf. That was a really great categorization
really
of things.
Really well thought out.
Very well thought.
Very good, yeah.
Yeah, we didn't deserve it. We didn't deserve it, but we got it, and we appreciate it. Charles said, just had to say thank you for providing lots of entertainment and thoughtful discussion over the years. I was floored to hear that the Wisecrack podcast are closing their virtual doors, but I'm happy I was able to support a podcast that was trying to fairly compensate their guests and bring in some people that I wouldn't have discovered without them. While this is a bitter pill to swallow, I'll be on the lookout for whatever you all do next. I'll close this email out with a final slap and chap. Charles' slap. This podcast crew is both individually and collectively great as hell, and I'm sure you'll all succeed in whatever's coming next. Thank you. Chap. I'll never be featured on Culture Binge. I'll never be a featured Culture Binge guest that gets to annoy the audience with baseball talk. Go Twins. Hey, I love the Twin Cities, Charles. I might not be a Twins fan, but one of my favorite regions of the country. Thank you, Charles. I hope the Twins have a good season. And yes, we'll never have the baseball episode. do either of you care about baseball at all?
No.
But I'm not really a baseball person.
You're like athletic though, Maddie, right? I know that's a weird question to ask. Yeah. You like do stuff.
Yeah, I'm like a runner though. I'm not like really a team sports watcher.
Okay. Fair enough. So you're just one of those people who like, rather than watching people make healthy life choices, you just make them for yourself.
I feel like if I got into sports, it would be too much for me. Like I would need to I get obsessive about things. So I'm like,
that's fair. Yeah, I relate to that. Helen, did you ever play sports in your life?
I did. I played softball, soccer, and I run.
Oh, yeah. Amazing.
But yeah, I mean, I'm not like a sports fanatic though. I mean, I like, but I have discovered that I really like the NBA. So
amazing. Helen and I are going to start an NBA podcast after this one ends. Most we've ever talked about sports on Culture Binge. That's not true. There was a period right when the pandemic started where I got to talk about sports a few different times when there was like issues with like playing in bubbles and like what the NBA did with theirs. And it was so exciting. And it made me love COVID because it gave me an opportunity to talk about sports on Culture Binge. So it was worth all the lives lost for me to talk about basketball.
Wow. Canceled again.
I'm already canceled. So now I'm leaning
He's
in.
He's just
I'm
trying.
Just
yeah.
It.
Now that you're canceled, just everything. Yeah.
Is Charles, and you might not know this, Burns, but is Charles the one who's like written in before and whenever like you say something that he likes in his emails, he'll be like, Burns, you're the Twins. Cause I love the Twins. And then if you say something he doesn't like, he's like, you're the
I mean, the White Sox, or I'm trying to think who the
no,
Twins
the New York
the Tigers. Oh, the Yankees.
The Yankees. Yeah.
That was hurtful. That was really hurtful when he like that. I, if it is him, then you know what? I take back everything nice I said about that email. I kid. It might be. Devin said, I was going to leave an email, but I couldn't muster the courage. I get that. I hate calling people on the phone. I get really anxious about it. I just wanted to say how sorry I am to hear that the Culture Binge podcast will be coming to an end. It's been really great getting to listen to you all, and I'm going to miss listening to you guys filling me in on the cultural zeitgeist. I hope that hopefully Culture Binge will live on in some way on the Wisecast channel and that both the wonderful Maddie and great Michael will return to Helmet. Devin, we fucking hope. We really do. Also, if either ever leaves, I will riot. That was my emphasis on the word riot. I'm still not over Serby leaving, though I hope she's doing great. Also, slaps and chaps, because why not? Slap. I graduated from university this May, so that's great. Hell yeah, Devin.
Congrats.
Chap. One grad school already turned me down, and I fear another rejection is around the corner. Don't fear what you don't know, Devin. And also, like, people get there's so much contingency and randomness. I hope the rest of your applications go well. If you don't get in this year, the best thing you can do if you still want to go to grad school is, like, get some type of job. Make some money. Put some of that away. Figure out what's important to you lifestyle-wise. And if you go into grad school with some like interim experience, I think it's only going to benefit you. And I think if in the meantime, if there's a grad program that you didn't get into, that you really wanted to get into in the next year, great time to reach out to some faculty there, build a relationship. If you live near it, go to a talk or a lecture or an event or something like that. Okay. Or just, you know, shoot us an email. We can talk about it more. But I hope things go well for you, Devin. We got Tristan next. Great names. You know, I think our audience just has great names. Tristan said, to everyone who helped make Culture Binge, I've been listening to the podcast since the beginning, and I just wanted to reach out before it's over and say thank you for the amazing content over the years. Culture Binge has made me laugh, think, and maybe even see the world a little differently. I'll be sad to see it go, but I look forward to seeing what you all do next. Thank you so much, Tristan. And then we got Vincent. I've really loved, and I'll just say this, maybe someone's listening now and they're like, this isn't fun. They're just reading emails that are like, we're sad you're going and saying thanks. You can, I don't know. What did you think? I mean, it's this is meaningful to us. We're stopping a thing. Like, I'm getting defensive over some magical also, person in my head who's judging me right now.
You know, if
they're
people,
not even there.
If people took the time to write in to us to say this, like, I like that you're giving them a little shout out.
I am. What else are you going to do? You know, here's the thing. If you're still listening at this point, you know, you're here because you care. And we care. So Vincent said, I've really loved the podcast for a long time. It was always a highlight of my fortnight. It is, and then fortnight, if you're not European or British, that just means every 2 weeks. Knowledge. It has always been a comfort. Thank you for everything. P.S. Thank you to Michael for turning me on to Open Mic Eagle. I love his music. I'm glad you love it. Hell yeah. I think we have some voicemails before some final words and wrapping up. So producer Matt, do you want to rock through those?
Hi, Culture Binge crew. This is Renee. I'm from Long Island, if you can't tell by my Long Island accent. And I wanted to say thank you guys for all the great work that you've done. I found you guys in 2020, right when Corona first locked everyone down, and I'm so glad I found you guys. I figured I would ask you guys a question about some of these award shows that just happened recently, Oscars and Grammys. You know, I feel like so many people talk about the different snubs, you know, the fact that Coda won Best Picture, talking about how it's like an iconic film for the deaf community when there was, you know, ones like The Sound of Metal that were also nominated in previous years that didn't win. And, you know, with Grammys, people get, you know, were upset about how Billie Eilish won all five or six of the nominations that she had. And there are other artists like Ariana Grande who didn't win any. So, yeah, I just want to talk about or have you guys talk about, you know, what the your take on like the process of these Grammy Oscar nominations and who decides who the winner is. And yeah, I really am going to miss Culture Binge. I listen to a lot of podcasts at work. So maybe if you guys could also give some podcast recommendations, I would love that. Thank you so much. And I'll really miss Culture Binge. I hope you guys can make it back someday. Thanks. Bye.
We will miss you too. Also, why can't everyone just be from Long Island and talk like that? It's so cool. Oh my God. Why didn't you call every time? Yeah, we'll do some quick thoughts on this. Well, at the end, I'm saying this out loud, so I remind myself, we'll recommend some podcast. That's kind of like, you know, you like break up with someone and then you're like, hey, now they're broken up. Like, can you like tell me who else I should maybe hit up? I don't know. I'll start with my thoughts on this with the award show stuff. I think we live in a weird era where the purpose of some of the award shows, is not to reward art. It's to create a spectacle, which will, allow, stations and brands to sell advertising to make their event a thing. And I think that a lot of the people who vote for some of the organizations like the Grammys and the Academy, don't take it that seriously and don't care a lot about like art. And they might vote for their friends or cause someone they know produced a thing or whatever. And I think you just see this cause, I did this a few weeks ago. If you look back at a lot of historic Best Picture winners, a lot of them are terrible. They're movies that like we would look at as a laughing stock now. And often it only takes a few years, like fucking Green Book won Best Picture. The movie's terrible. And somehow that like Driving Miss Daisy won Best Picture. Horrible movie.
Is that a horrible movie?
Oh, it is. And it's dark. Watch it now and you'll feel very bad.
Okay, I haven't seen it since I was like a child.
I will say this, not the best movie on things like race, not real good on that. But all that to say is I think that a lot of us, self-included, have wasted time and energy watching things like the Academy Awards, assuming that they reward good art. One of the reasons we do this is because every now and then they accidentally do. So occasionally a Moonlight or a Parasite wins Best Picture. But I don't even think those won because of I mean, to be cynical, I think there's people in the Academy who vote for those things because they want to look like cool, woke, progressive, diverse. And I think if you look at, you know, two of us just talked about the movie Everything Everywhere All at Once. In my mind, that movie is better than at least 8 of the Best Picture nominees from this past year, if not better than 9 of them. The only one I'm sure it's not better than is Drive My Car, but everything else is up for grabs. I just think we're in an era where it's important that, like, we consume art we like, we read about art we like from people who have interesting things to say about it. We listen to podcasts or whatever that talk about movies and music in a way that's smart and engaging, but we remind ourselves that things like the Grammys, which I watched last night, which was horrible, things like the Grammys and the Oscars aren't, you know, they accidentally reward good people, but that's the exception and not the rule. That's my thought on that. What do you guys think?
I mean, you said that all beautifully, and I think it's like how I've felt and how a lot of people have felt for like years now with the Oscars and like with the Golden Globes, of course, enough so that they just like got rid of them. When I was a kid, I used to watch the Oscars and like, you know, really wanted to be in film, and I just thought it was so beautiful, and like people would win and be really excited, and I thought it meant something. And it's just really upsetting when to kind of grow up and realize this. And I don't know if it's always been like that or if like my perception is just different. You know what I mean? But it does feel
it's gotten worse. It's gotten worse for sure. Yeah. I think even I don't know. If you look at some of the, like the 70s, at least for cinema, there are some fucking bangers. And you had an era where like, and I know that's the bad thing about this era, it was all like white dudes. But I mean, God, you had years where you were getting like a Bogdanovich film on top of a Scorsese film, on top of a Robert Altman film, on top of a Coppola film. Like at the same time that like, you know, Godard was still putting out movies and Truffaut has movies coming out and Fellini, you know, I guess in that era he'd stopped. But like we had some eras where you would have some pretty heavy hitters putting out movies all in the same year.
And it felt like they weren't trying to make the award show interesting. They were like, this is just an award show that we're showing you to show you. And now it feels like they're like, this is a TV special that happens to be giving awards.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like the article that we were going to talk about
for
the podcast before, you know, when they talk about how it's like just SponCon now, like everything's an ad, you know, which is true in general, but like it couldn't have been more true for this year's Oscars, I feel like, which, but Maddie, I had the same experience, right? Like growing up, it was like, oh, the Oscars.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, all this magic and the stars. And it's like, oh, that's just like, what a dream, right? And then I think, though, that, yeah, like my perception changed. I feel like I got really cynical about the Oscars, like probably like, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, this is all just a bunch of bullshit. It's like, yeah.
Well, think about it this way, right? Like if the Oscars is supposed to be, and this is a spotty analogy, the Super Bowl of movies, right? Or of film. Imagine if when the Super Bowl started, someone was like, okay, kids, have you heard of football before? Here's what a football is. And treated you like a fucking idiot. Treated you like someone who'd never watched the sport before, didn't understand anything, showed you montages of people just like throwing balls in slow motion as text on the screen said, football. And that's how they treat us. Like, they could use those montages to explore aspects of filmmaking, to interview cinematographers about what they do and how that's an art, talk to sound designers, interview actors about the methods by which they prepare for roles, and they could just treat us like adults. But instead, they do these silly things like, ooh, the Twitter award for best movie is Army of the Dead, a Netflix-only movie. What was second place? An NFT Johnny Depp film? And you're going to show that? You know what I mean? And like you shouldn't do that. That's like at the Super Bowl, you wouldn't be like, here's the audience award for coolest football player. No, that's not what we're doing here. And they've dumbed it down and no one watches it anymore. But they just make it dumber, which alienates the people that should love this thing. Like, make it a celebration. And the same thing for the Grammys for music. Make these celebrations of art for the people that like it. And if anything, rather than alienating people that love the thing, maybe that means that a more casual film goer comes away from it being like, oh shit, I never knew about a lot of that stuff. I'd never heard about half of those movies. I want to check those out now. Where instead it's just like, okay, like, you know, I don't know. I just, the whole thing really bummed me out this year. And there were some good movies this year, and then I don't know. I've been canceled so many times. But also, too, the thing I've said a lot is the discourse around movies this year was just the most baby-brained shit ever. It's my new phrase I'm using a lot, is baby-brained. People who are, like, commentators on the media just show that, like, they don't deserve to watch movies. But real quick, let's go through some podcast recommendations. I'm literally just looking at my iTunes right now, so I'll just rip some off real quick. For TV, I really like the podcast The Watch. It's over on the Ringer Network. I like another Ringer podcast, The Big Picture, on movies. It's a little bit normy, but it's still pretty good. Why Theory is a podcast that talks about philosophy and films and culture, hosted by Todd McGowan, who was on the last episode of Culture Binge, the philosophy I interviewed. So Why Theory is really fun. Blank Check is another fun movie podcast. Unspooled is another movie podcast I like with comedian Paul Scheer and Amy Nicholson, who's a film critic as well. The A24 podcast has some fun conversations. Last movie one I'll say is Truth in Movies, which is the podcast of the British film magazine Little White Lies. I like that a lot as well. What do you guys got? A few podcasts that you can recommend.
My main podcast is Review Review, featuring Jeff and Riley, who were also on an episode of Culture Binge. And then I listen to Pen Pals with Rory Scovel. I listen to a lot of comedy podcasts. And then I also work on Owls at Dawn, which is Austin from Show Me the Meetings podcast. It's a philosophy podcast.
Wow. I was today's years old when I learned that, Maddie.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been editing for them. So
that's great. I used to have a music segment on that show when they first started, and then we stopped because they were just, yeah, I did. And it was on hip hop in particular. And eventually they realized, like, I don't think our podcast audience wants to hear Michael talk about rap music for 10 minutes a week. And I was like, yeah, I don't think they do.
It kind of checks out. Like, it makes sense now. Like, their theme song is really hip hop. And I was like, kind of out of the blue for like the topic of this podcast, but I love it.
Yeah. Well, fun fact, I would review albums, and there's a rapper out of Chicago I like a lot named Vic Spencer. One of his producers sampled my Owls at Dawn review of his album and put it on their next album. So there's audio from me on Owls of Dawn that's on a widely released rap album. Yeah, Vic Spencer. I can find the song. It's pretty funny. But it's funny too because he's kind of like a pretty hard artist, and all of a sudden my cracker ass voice just comes out of nowhere, and it's just like, oh no. Helen, you have any podcasts you want to throw out?
Yeah, I've got a couple. Okay, so I mostly listen to movie podcasts, and then I have a couple of others. So one of them is the Script Notes podcast, which is about screenwriting, with John August, and Mazin. It's Mazin, yeah.
Mazin.
Yeah,
I almost love this said that podcast. One too. A good podcast. Craig Mazin's such an asshole, though. I fucking hate that guy.
But it is a great podcast. Good podcast. You're canceled. You can't.
I'm not canceled. I'm just saying, you're not canceled, Helen.
But like, it's a great podcast, and it's they talk about more than screenwriting, and I love how they, you know, just kind of take things that are happening in society and manage to tie in screenwriting with them. It's a great podcast, in my opinion, which I've said three times now. Another one that I really like is the Q&A with Jeff Goldsmith, where Jeff Goldsmith interviews filmmakers. He's just had a lot of excellent guests on. It's a great one. Then another one, just one last movie podcast. Sorry. This is a friend of mine does this one. It's called Just Shoot It. Also about filmmaking and screenwriting. It's by Matt Enlow and Oren Kaplan, who is, I think both of them are directors. And yeah, they also have a lot of great guests on, and just, I think, you know, they talk about their own experiences with filmmaking, and I just find it really interesting. And then I want to plug like two more, sorry, really quick. One of them is one that I work on. Well, I don't work
on it. It's not like our last episode. Yeah,
sorry. Gotta put it out there. So I don't work on this podcast yet, although I hope I do at some point. But I do work with the company that produces it, and it's called Celestial Citizen. And it is about social issues in space. And a lot of things, which sounds like it's ahead of its time.
I've heard of this company in this place. Yes, I feel like I know someone who works there.
Yeah, we all do. No, but it actually is a really good podcast. Like, the guests that they have on talk about, everything from, like thinking about sustainability in space to thinking about indigenous perspectives on space. And I find that it's just an interesting group of people. I find the host is also, she asks great questions. And yeah, I would highly recommend listening to that one. And then I have a very small one that I've been listening to a lot lately. Last one, but I want to plug this. So there's a small podcast called The History of Africa. And if you've ever been interested in African history, which I don't feel like at least I learned enough about when I was in school, you should definitely check it out. I know it's on Spotify. I don't know if it's on Apple, but yeah, and I cannot remember the host's name for the life of me, but just like right off the bat from episode one, he got me really hooked on just kind of his breadth of knowledge about the history of Africa. And there's so much interesting stuff. So yeah, highly recommend that if you're a history person.
Cool. As Matt gets the next voicemail queued up, got another email that just came in from Marco, who just said, thanks for everything. Lots of love from Sydney, Australia. Thank you, Marco. Really appreciate it. And, you know, we're sending good vibes to Australia. Do we have another couple voicemails?
Hey, this is a message for Culture Bin.
Oh, cool. Let's get through
those. I left a message when Serby left, and I'm leaving a message now, unfortunately. Anyways, Michael, I'm curious. You always talk about The Bachelor. I love The Bachelor. What are your thoughts on The Bachelor? Do you listen to the podcast Game of Roses that analyzes the show as if it's a game? Do you think that the show is like a review of American culture and dating at large? I just want to know all your thoughts on the show since no one else was willing to talk about it before. I'm going to miss you. Have a good one. Bye.
Oh my God. The thing I've wanted to talk about forever. Some people know this. I'm obsessed with The Bachelor. I've talked about it a couple times on here. They won't let me make videos about it on Wisecrack. It's a big part of my life. I will say, speaking of podcasts, I sometimes get to guest on a podcast called The Bachelor Zone. So check that out if you like Bachelor content, friends.
How did I feel like I missed this whole side of you. I'm obsessed with
attention.
The Bachelor.
We'll talk about that off mic then. here's my take real quick. Here's what happened with The Bachelor. The Bachelor starts. We have a show where people, there's no social influencer economy. There's no, you go on The Bachelor or Bachelorette and get a job out of it. There's people who are narcissists, but these are people who want to potentially actually try to find a love relationship, get a little attention along the way. Eventually what happens is people start getting incidentally famous or getting some like work from being on The Bachelor. So now you have people that want to go on The Bachelor so they can be a part of the Bachelor ecosystem, maybe go on some other shows along the way. Then we have people to go on The Bachelor, come off The Bachelor, start making $100,000 a year, hawking flat tummy tea on Instagram. So then you have people that are like, I want to leave my marketing job in Denver or my job as a nurse's assistant in Nashville to, you know, Bachelorheads know what I'm talking about. And I want to go on so I can get off of the show to make money that way. So eventually the show became a performance of itself. And got very meta in this internalized way. I think that the show's entering a new phase now in my topography of the history of The Bachelor. But I think we're entering a phase now where we're getting some folks again who are vaguely earnest, who are giving it a try. But here's why. They're willing to give it a try because the dating universe has become all about social media clout and appearance and all this sort of stuff. So now people are like, well, the dating scene's so fucked anyways, maybe I will just go on The Bachelor. So I would think that's my sociological analysis of the show. Shoot, I mean, I'd love to talk more about this, but that's my general theory there. Maddie, do you want to jump in real quick?
I agree with you. I think Bachelor in Paradise is sort of, has become more real than the actual Bachelor. Like Bachelor in Paradise is the way to actually form a good relationship.
If you're really about Bachelor Nation, that's you get more excited now. If you're like a real like passport stamped resident of Bachelor Nation, you're excited for off season and getting down to Mexico.
And I feel like those are some like real relationships. I'm like, I believe that more so than I believe that.
Look at the stats. Yeah. You're more likely to stay together if you're a Paradise couple than a main franchise couple. But that's again. True. You know, check out, if you're looking for podcasts, you care about The Bachelor, go subscribe to Bachelor Zone right now. My bud, Mike Wally runs that. Great. And they've recently, Bachelor Zone has gotten a lot of ex-contestants on too, which is very fun. So you get that perspective. Another voicemail?
Hey, Culture Binge team. Greg from New Jersey here to say how much I've enjoyed this podcast over the past few years. And I really appreciate all the work you've put into it. I'm bummed that it's ending, but I am excited to see how the YouTube live streams will go on in the future. And while I'm calling, I also wanted to let you know what soil horizons or layers I think you'd be. I think Helen would be the A horizon, topsoil, containing a mixture of organic materials and minerals. Raymond would be the B horizon, the subsoil, which you have to dig down a little deeper to find. And Michael would be the C horizon, the parent rock.
This is amazing.
Held the podcast together.
Oh, did we lose it?
In the past few months. Again, I really appreciate all the work that you guys have put into the show and wanted to thank you for making it. And have a good one.
Oh, thank you so much, Greg. That's fun. that was very on brand for Helen. Thank you so much for that. And yeah, I will, once I know we're at the last voicemail, I'll speak a little bit more to something Greg said, but really appreciate that. And Greg, we just like, appreciate you for sticking around. There's a million podcasts with so many people, and I just appreciate the hell out of people that have made this a part of their regular rotation. Was that the last voicemail, or do we got one more?
This is a call for Culture Binge. I just wanted to see if you guys are going to talk about that crazy dystopian Disney retirement communities that you need tickets to get to. And also, it's kind of unfair. Michael, you've not explained so far why you're banned from Universal Studios. Hopefully we'll get that story someday. You promised it many years ago, and I'm still waiting. So please give us the answer.
I am nothing if not a man of my word. I am the son of Tom. I am the grandson of George and Eileen, and I am here to be honest. Okay, here's what's happened. We're talking 2002. Your friend Michael, then people called him Mike. He had gorgeous long hair too. Hair like you could never imagine. Honestly, my hair back then looks a lot like Maddie's hair now, except like shoulder length, but like very similar color and sort of style to it. And if you're just listening to my podcast, Maddie has great hair. That's, she doesn't have like weird hair. And I'm like, oh, that hair. As is Helen. Helen's hair is like a darker color than what mine was when I had hair. Besides the point, Michael goes with his friends, junior of high school, his friends, who is it? Jay and Grant. We go to an improv comedy club because your boy's been about that life for years. And at the improv comedy club, they unveiled a new beverage that had hit the Orlando, Florida area called Red Bull. We didn't really know, have it a lot before then. And the comedy club had a deal where you could pay a certain number, a certain amount, and you get a bucket of Red Bull, like a bucket of beer. And we got five or six Red Bulls. My friends didn't like them. Your friend Michael, then Mike, loved him. So he's chugging Red Bulls, just getting jacked up on the bull. Then that ends, and we had this big plan. Let's go to Universal City Walk. We'll walk around, and we'll, like, talk to girls who are, like, tourists, who are there with their families from, like, Wisconsin or whatever. To be clear, we were not cool guys. This was our dumb plan because we weren't cool. We were weird, nerdy guys. We were at the improv club on the weekend. We would have been at a party if we were cool. We get there, and I forget how exactly it happened. There was a dare involved. I got dared to basically strip down and swim in a public fountain area in Universal City Walk. There was like a little pool thing. There was big water shooting up. I did not get naked. I did strip to my underwear, jumped in screaming, splashed a bunch of people, put like my mouth up to one fountain. So it was like shooting water in it as I yelled. To be clear, at this point in my life, my two favorite shows in the world were Jackass and then the Tom Green Show. Very performative, kind of, you know, disruptive styles of comedy, which I really liked. A lot of the early things I made back then were like that. Two police golf carts rolled up hard. They dragged me out, put me in a like police golf cart. The golf cart went into an elevator. The whole golf cart then went down three levels. I went into a little room that was like the on-site police station. I was charged with trespassing. They like did my picture and all this other stuff. My friend Jay's mom called the cops acting as if she was my parents to at least let me go. Then they had to drive me off the premises. At one point, the on-site officer said, "Hope you're real fucking proud of yourself. You're never allowed here for the rest of your life." And I looked him in the eyes and says, "I don't care. Disney's better." And then he like hit the table when I said that. Now I don't agree, but that's basically the gist of what had happened. My friends had to find me still kind of soaked with half of my clothes in a bag on the side of the road because I didn't have a cell phone at this age. So they took me away, and my friends basically just waited at the entrance of Universal Studios hoping that they would see me again. So I'm on their record books as someone who can't go there. That's the story. You know,
Red Bull sponsor Michael.
Yeah. Okay. So this is the end of the podcast. We are going to stick around for a little bit on a stream if anyone has any questions. But I'm going to end with two things, and then we'll be calling it a day. First thing, if you like this style of content, which is basically the side of Wisecrack where we're more casual, we talk to you. We interact and talk about pop culture. There's a few things that still exist. If you are a Wisecrack patron, one thing that happens is twice a month we do a stream just for patrons. Producer Matt helps run that. I'm on it. Sometimes have guests, and we just kind of shoot the shit. We talk about recent Wisecrack videos. We interact in the chat. It's very fun. I know a lot of Culture Binge regulars show up there as well. That's a thing, and I think that's at the cheapest level of the Patreon. Along with that, we have a new podcast called, we want to call it Behind the Crack. It's starting on the Patreon. It's going to be interviews. And then, of course, yeah. And then we're going to have the stuff where I talk about philosophy. We're also going to start doing streams. All I can tell you right now, because this is all that I know, we're going to do a couple of them a month for the next 3 or 4 months and see how they go. There's not a lot of planning yet. Me and the Wisecracks producer, Griffin, are going to meet about it tomorrow. So we're going to do some streams. The idea there is to do kind of like what we're doing right now and take elements from the podcast and have streaming shows that I'll host. We'll have different folks on, and we can hopefully talk about culture, talk about movies, talk about current events, and have some fun ways to interact. We are going to try those. What'll be important to us is show up, hang out, get involved in the chat, and most importantly, just hit us up and let us know what works. And before I get into the last word, let me just say this again. Helen, real quick, just remind everyone where they can follow you on social media.
You can follow me on Twitter at Helen Flourish.
Maddie, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Fakest Bitch I Know with no W at the end.
Wow. Kiss your mother with that podcast username. And you probably know this. I'm at Michael O'Burns. I say that because we start doing new stuff. I want you to hit us up however you can. Before I go, I just want to say that being a part of this podcast has been one of the most meaningful experiences, if not the most meaningful, of all my time working at Wisecrack. You know, I spend a lot of time reading scripts off teleprompters in empty rooms, and it's so amazing to get to do this where I'm talking to other people, where we are engaging with an audience, where we're having conversations that I know extend beyond just this podcast. And I do want to thank, obviously, Helen and Maddie and Matt today, but in general, you know, people like Jacob and Jared, who started Wisecrack and got the podcast going, Alec and Serby, the OGs, people like Helen and Raymond and Rachel and Riley, who have been on recently and have helped out. And of course, Maddie has just been one of the most amazing parts of working on this podcast. Getting to know both Matt and Maddie as part of Wisecrack's podcast has been really phenomenal. And we live in a city where a lot of people are pretty full of shit and pretty cynical. And meeting Matt and Maddie has been a great reminder that there's just like really good people in this town who are great to work with and are just fun, creative, interesting people. So I know no matter what, we hope the best for them. And hopefully it involves working on some stuff together here. I hope that like if you've listened to this podcast for a while, some of the stuff you've taken away from it is the stuff that really matters to us. And if I had to narrow that stuff down, I'd probably say, you know, curiosity. We've really tried to be curious about the world around us and open to exploring the meaning of both high and low culture. And I hope that's something that you all got from listening to it. We've also tried to be critical and not just take in information from culture, but challenge ourselves, challenge our assumptions, and challenge each other to understand our culture better and the value of what's happening. And we've also been skeptical in a good way, skeptical about assuming that the world should work any particular way, skeptical of the way that values are kind of sold to us, and really skeptical towards the way in which institutions can exploit our time, our labor, and our attention. But maybe most importantly, I hope that you've experienced, I guess, a lightness or a humor from this podcast. Now, it's not a comedy podcast, so I don't mean that you laughed a lot. And there is the one guy who wrote in once who said that he thinks I'm not funny, but his wife thinks I'm funny. But I think that we try to approach everything on this podcast with a lightness and a humor that's hopefully kept us from taking ourselves or our culture too seriously. And hopefully that was something you all felt. And I think if there's a theme we've explored a lot in this podcast, maybe more than anything else, it's the tensions and contradictions brought into our lives by work. And we've focused on how, you know, a lot of those assumptions have, I don't know, have told us what work should be and how it affects our lives. And at the end of the day, the end of this podcast is a casualty of the culture of the bottom line and the idea that that content only has value when that's financial value. To be clear, I'm not mad at our company for making that decision. I get it. And it's like a hard place to be, but it's hard to say goodbye. Finally, I just want to say thank you to everyone who took time out of your lives to listen to this podcast, to engage with us, to write to us, to leave voicemails. I mean, especially those of you who have hit me up personally over the years and let me know what you thought. I'm going to miss you all a lot. And I truly, truly, truly hope you know. I know there's a lot of podcasts, a lot of content we consume, but y'all mean a lot to me. Posting this podcast has meant a lot to me, and I'm really going to miss it. I hope people will stick around for the new streams we're going to try on the Wisecrack YouTube channel. And yeah, guys, I just hope you know that no matter what we do next, I at least promise to take the same values we embodied on this podcast to guide whatever we make next. So for myself, Michael, for Maddie, for Helen, and for everyone else who's ever been a part of this podcast, we're saying goodbye for the last time from Culture Binge. We'll see you on the other side, guys.